Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hi, everybody. My name's Mickey Bush, and I'm a fully conceded alcoholic. That's fully conceded, not conceited, as you may think later on. Thank you for the watch. I borrowed our Al-Anon qualifiers watch. I got a disease of more, so I don't even know what I'm going to say up here, but I do know I'm going to want more time to say it in, you know, so you're going to have to try and cover you. Having a little gratitude attack. Anybody know what I mean by gratitude attack? Yeah. A gratitude attack's all the time now. Always reminds me of when I'm hugging my kid or something. Gratitude. When I got to recovery, gratitude wasn't even in my vocabulary. Gratitude? What was there to be grateful for Christ's sake? Gratitude? Screw gratitude. Screw you ingratitude. But I can't define the truth from the false. And the truth of the matter is that I've had something to be grateful for all my life. All my life I've had something to be grateful for, but never knew about it, never recognized it. I mean, think about it. My name's Mickey Bush. Mickey Bush. Think about that. Mickey Bush. That puts me somewhere between a mouse and a president. You know, anywhere in that spectrum is where you're likely to find me. And I am really grateful they never named me Harry. Can you imagine going through life with a name like Harry Bush? You're a rotten lot laughing at that. I'm a delicate dude. I'm a very delicate dude. I got all these feelings. Yeah. You know, I'm really glad to be here. I'm really delighted to be here and to rekindle some old friendships and to thank our lovely lady. I think she's smashing. Wasn't she smashing last night, Mildred? Yeah. And our lovely Al-Anon speaker here. Are you still releasing me? I'd love to be an Al-Anon. I wish I was an Al-Anon. Al-Anons have got our beautiful, wonderful 12-step program, and they can drink. That's good shit, isn't it? Damn! What a doozy that is, you know? God! I got the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, with me. I borrowed from our mate here, Dan. And I couldn't help feeling that it's the 132. And of course, we all know what's on one page 132, don't we? Because we all read the book, don't we? Anybody read the book? Who reads the book? Alcoholics Anonymous. Good idea. Good idea if you're alcoholic. Read the book. And of course, on the beautiful book, it says, "So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and have been given the power to help others." Wow, what a gift. Is that a gift or not? Yeah. I love the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Didn't know nothing about it when I got here, but I do now. You guys taught me and taught me well, and I'm glad. I'm a city boy, you know, I'm a city boy. Concrete and neon, you know, is where I come from. I get nosebleeds coming out this far out of town, you know what I mean? I'm from London, England. You probably picked up on that, right? This is the way I speak. Alcohol didn't do this to me, you know what I mean? I'm from Northwest London, and where I come from, everybody drinks. Don't know why we drink, never ever asked why we drink. There was no reason to drink, there was no reason not to drink. Everybody just drank. We drank if the team won, we drank if the team lost. If it was a tie, we drank till there was a result. I mean, that was all, I mean, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. Nobody said you should, nobody said you shouldn't. I came in here and everybody knew why you were drinking. My first meeting on January the 15th, 1983, people talked about why they were drinking. They were drinking because they couldn't stand who they was, and they drinking because of covering up the pain, and they drank because they had all these issues, like pass the tissues, I got issues, you know. And I think, at what stage of the game do you discover that? I can't even imagine that, me. I mean, I cannot imagine going into any pub I ever drank at and saying to the bartender, "Oh, bartender, hit me with a triple shot of your best booze. Because I can't stand who I am and I want to cover up the pain tonight." Never happened. Yeah. "Oh, Mr. Dealer Man, give me an extra rock of crack cocaine because I really feel inadequate." Never happened. Yeah. I have no idea why I do what I do or why, you know, what. But you guys did, and you taught me, and you taught me well. And you taught me, you know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983, I was so sick. I was so sick that I didn't know I was sick. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be so sick that you don't know you're sick? That's really sick. And if you're as sick as I was when I got here, so sick that you come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, a meeting like this, full of good alkies, seems to me, and you scan the room and you think, "I'm not as sick as him." Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be in a room full of alkies thinking you ain't as sick as the next guy? That's really sick. So if you're here today wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alcoholic or not, I want you to know that I can relate to being as sick as you don't think you are. You know, really sick. And I never knew. I never knew, but you guys knew. You guys knew, and you welcomed me. And I remember that, because on January the 15th, 1983, my best friends, who I'd known all my life, told me to piss off, just piss off. I walked down to a meeting in West Hollywood, Architects of Adversity meeting, knowing nothing about nothing. There was two dudes standing outside. Anybody here know West Hollywood? Yeah? Very special part of town. Commonly referred to as Boys Town. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the kind of town where if you drop your wallet on Santa Monica Boulevard, you've got to kick it up to Sunset before you can pick it up, you know? Nothing to do with nothing. If you're gay, don't worry about it. You know, no one cares. As I approached that meeting, I don't know nothing about nothing. I don't know nothing about alcoholics having a home group, doing their commitments and contributing to their own recovery and being there to welcome wet drunks like me showing up. They tell me I was grey, shaky and smelly when I arrived there. I thought I was God's gift to the world, you know. As I approached that meeting, one of those dudes stepped forward with his hand out. I said, "What do you want?" He said, "I want to welcome you to AA." I said, "What?" He said, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "What?" And the other guy stepped forward with his hand out. He said, "Keep coming back." I said, "What for?" He said, "We love you." I said, "I bet you do." If dudes tell you they love you in West Hollywood, you get a bit nervous, you know? And I snuck round them and I went to the doorway of this little community centre there on meeting going on. I stood in that doorway and I looked in that doorway and I remember going, "Wow, wow, holy shit, what is this?" The room was full of smoke. There was about 20 or so people. There were some celebrities in there that I already knew. And I remember going, "Wow." I remember everybody was talking. Weren't nobody listening, everybody talking. And I went, "Wow." And I've been saying "wow" ever since. And You know, I'm just celebrating this week on May 8th. I celebrated 34 years. And right in the same month as your 44 there. Lovely. 44, 34, down to 24 or whatever. Yeah, good. Good, isn't it? It's good. I like it. I like it a lot. You know, and I'm more thrilled today about being an active member than I've ever been. It's more thrilling and more exhilarating to be among you than it's ever been. You know? And you know what? If you were to tell me, Mick, it's $1,000, tell me the last 2 days in a row that you didn't go to a meeting, I wouldn't be able to take your money. I cannot remember the last 2 days in a row that I didn't go to a meeting. I go to lots and lots and lots of meetings. So if there's new folk here, come to meetings, come to meetings. You know? Don't keep coming back. We say keep coming back because we want people to keep coming back, but you know, if you're already here, stay, stick with us, stay. You know, become a sticker and a stayer, not a keep coming backer, you know. Be a sticker and a stayer, S-T-A-Y, sober today and yesterday, you know. And so stay with us if you're new around here and wondering what we do and how we do it. It's exhilarating. I'm thrilled to bits. And my life, I got here and my life was in ruins. When I got here, my life was in ruins. Today, my life's in perfect running order. And the only difference between run and ruin, if you look at it, ruin is R-U-I-N. Run is R-U-N. The only difference is I. So that tells me I got to get the hell out of the way and let the old man upstairs run the show. You know, that's what I call my old god Gus, G-U-S, the guy upstairs. You know, and I'm his favourite. He told me, he said, "You're my favourite. That's why I made you so good looking." You know. But never had it when I got here. When I got here, well-meaning people, at least I hope they're well-meaning people, they said, "Let go and let God." I said, "What?" They said, "Turn it over to God." I said, "What?" They said, "Pray to God." I said, "Pray to God? If I pray to him, he'll know where I am." You know? I weren't going to pray to no God that was going to get me for everything. God was going to get me for everything. They told me, "God will get you for that. God will get you for that. God will get... Don't you play with that, God will strike you blind." Well, you know, you tell an alky not to do something and he'll do it. So I did it, and when I found out how good it felt, I thought, well, I'll risk one eye. You know. Oh, you do that weird shit, huh? Yeah. So I was bolting out the door. I didn't want to hear about that God crap. No, I didn't want to hear it. I'm gone. I'm running out the door. Well, just so happens there were some Native American brothers sitting by the door, and they said, "Mick, come and sit with us. We got a different way of saying some of this stuff." And I had nowhere else to go anyway, so I sat with them, and they talked in terms of the Great Spirit and Father Sky, Mother Earth, brothers and sisters, family, F-A-M-I-L-Y, Father and Mother, I love you. And they talked in terms of the Great Spirit, loving everything he created, from the smallest blade of grass to the Empire State Building. If you're his kid, I'm his kid. If you're, excuse me, and it felt warmer and fuzzier than that what I'd been brought up to believe. On your knees, sinner. That didn't work with me, you know. I didn't like it. I was raised in a religion. I knew all about God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, Muhammad, and any other noun you want to raise. But that didn't work for me. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. You know, I hated it so much. I don't tell this story very often, but I guess it's all right up here out in the woods. My old man whacked me one day. "Go to confession." I went to go to confession. You go in this little cubicle and, you know, there's some pervert behind a curtain, you know. He said, "Confess your sins." I said, "You first." You know what I mean? But I did. I hated it. I couldn't stand it. And I thought, how can I get... I'm 10 or 11 years old. I don't know. I'm weird. But, you know, and I'll get even with this lot. So I took a dump in the corner, didn't I, you know? The parish priest went completely ballistic Sunday, standing at the pulpit, you know, big Irish community, and you know, he's just bellowing, his veins are popping, and, oh, shit, in the confessional, you know. The whole parish was like, upset the priest. All except me, sneaky little bastard, laughing up my sleeve, you know. Well, I mean, you know, I'm potential alcoholic that I am. The next week I went prepared. I went in the other side. Left the note, said the phantom shitter strikes again. Well, I mean, I couldn't abide by it. But I learned. You guys taught me and I learned, and I'm glad and I'm blessed, you know, today. You know, I didn't know anything about it. I told you that I got to my first meeting that I went to under my own volition on January the 15th, 1983. But I'd been going to meetings, oh, I don't know, a couple of months or so earlier than that, because I was conned into going to meetings. Why I do so much 12-step work is because I'm a result of a 12-step, and I didn't know I was being 12-stepped. There was an English rock and roll singer that was 12-stepping me, and he led me to believe that I was doing him a favor and being a friend by going to meetings with him, because he had to go to these bloody meetings, and would I go? And I went, yeah, I didn't mind going. So I would go to these meetings, but I didn't know what they were about, or I had no desire or anything like that. I was just, you know, trolling along. You know? But I was in a blackout most of the time. Are there any other blackout drinkers here? And the rest of you lying mothers, I know blackout drinkers when I see them. I didn't even know what a blackout was. Told a guy a story, he said, yeah, he was in a blackout. Didn't know what it was, but denied it anyway. I said, no, I wasn't. I didn't know, it was a disease of denial. I do today, I wrote a word, denial. D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying. Or D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice it's a lie. I don't notice when I'm lying, and I don't notice when I'm being lied to, especially by a disease that tells me I ain't got it. Anybody relate to that? Anybody relate to the voices that talk to you? Who relates to the voices that talk to them? Yeah, no shit. You know the voices I'm talking about. Them voices that just said, what voices? Them voices. You know them voices? Drive you crazy, them voices. Drive you crazy, talking to you all the time. Anyway, you know, they say when the pupil's ready, the master appears. And on January the 15th, 1983, a couple of things happened that I didn't realise was happening at the time. You know, and one was that I hit bottom. The other was that alcohol, and in my case drugs, stopped working. I didn't know anything about that, but I learned, and you guys taught me, and I learned well. But I'm blessed to have had the gift of desperation. On January the 15th, 1983, hurting so bad, with the gift of desperation. You know, I hit bottom and alcohol stopped working. And I didn't know about it at the time. I looked for hitting bottom in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not in there. Hitting bottom's not mentioned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't understand it. I went around asking. I asked folks, what does it mean, hitting bottom? What does hitting bottom mean? Most people didn't know. I don't know whether you know or not, but a lot of people didn't know. Everybody seemed to know. Everybody seemed to think that they knew what hitting bottom was, but they actually didn't. And when I learned, that's why I'm talking about it now. Hitting bottom's not mentioned in the program, but you know, in the 12 and 12 that Bill wrote many years later, in the very first step, he insists that every alcoholic must hit bottom first. He actually says that. You know, insist that every alcoholic must hit bottom. Well, that's some ballsy crap to say to a bunch of drunks, isn't it? We insist that you hit bottom first. Yeah, well, hit bottom on this, Father Mucker. You know. We don't like that authority figure, do we? But it wasn't in the book, and I asked people, what does it mean to hit bottom? And people told me about the outside circumstances of their life at the tail end of their drinking, like mine had been. You know, but hitting bottom wasn't about the outside circumstances. Hitting bottom was an inside job, not an outside circumstance. Hitting bottom was an inside job. But people were telling me about how much they lost or where they ended up or being locked away. And you know, that was the outside circumstances, not the inside job, you know. You'd be amazed at some of the things people told me their bottom was. I work with a little couple that I'm very fond of, and they work hard at their sobriety. And the little chickadee, she's a good little cutie, and I said to her, you know, Bill insists that every alcoholic must hit bottom first. Have you hit bottom, love? She said, yes, I've hit bottom, Mick. I said, oh, I'm curious. Tell me about it. She said, it's easy. I was feet to the curb hustling the Broadway, prostituting myself, trying to earn a dollar so I could get loaded. I said, that wasn't your bottom, love. She said, well, I think it was. I said, I don't give a shit what you think. I said to her, dude, have you hit bottom, pal? He said, yes, Mick, I've hit bottom. I said, tell me about it. He said, it's easy. I was locked up in a penitentiary, married to Bubba. I said, that wasn't your bottom. He said, it felt like it was. Bad minds. You've got bad minds, I can tell. On January the 15th, 1983, I hit bottom without knowing what it was at the time. The inside job. That taste. We're far from, in our meetings, we say things like everybody's bottom's different. Even we talk about the last gasp as being different and stuff like that. But there's no unity in being different. And everybody's bottom's the same, not different. Yours is the same as mine, mine's the same as yours, ours is the same as theirs, theirs is the same as ours. On January the 15th, 1983, in desperation and despair, I can remember very clearly, without knowing what I was saying, who I was saying it to, or what the results of what I was saying was going to be, I can remember hurting so bad and going, help me, please, help me, help me, help me, what's wrong with me? And asked for help from outside of myself. ASK, our saving kit. Help, H-E-L-P, His ever-loving presence. And although this disease had gotten me to abandon God, God hadn't abandoned me. And when I turned back to him and asked for help, he seemed to be looking over my shoulder and he seemed to say, Mick, you silly bastard, I've been waiting for you to ask. Now get yourself over that 12-step fellowship. Sent me to you. I asked for help. He sent me to you. Because here was the power that he'd provided for an alcoholic of my kind, your kind, our kind, beautiful book says, to not have to drink today. I didn't know this disease had gotten me to abandon God. I was raised in a religion. I know all about, you know. Today I work with two nuns, two priests, a rabbi and a Sikh. Dedicated their lives to the service of God and mankind. Couldn't stay sober. So I knew all about that, but I didn't realize what condition I was in. I didn't know that I was in the grips of a fatal progressive disease that had me by the short ones and just pulled me in and, you know, got me to do whatever it wanted me to do. Long before I got here, the disease had gotten me to abandon God and spirituality, so that along the path of life, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, the disease became the power in my life, dictating and dominating everything I say, do, think, and feel. And in and of myself, I was helpless, hopeless, and powerless to resist its demands and had to do what it wanted me to do, which was drink. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And I was in the grips of this fatal progressive disease. And I couldn't not do it just because I didn't want to do it. You know, the disease was so powerful that it made me do it even when I didn't want to do it. When I absolutely didn't want to do it, I did it anyway. Anybody know what I mean? You know, this disease made me do what I already didn't want to do. So I couldn't not do it just because I didn't want to do it. I had to not want to do it, but then I had to do these steps and this work so that I don't do what I already don't want to do. And if I ain't done these steps or doing these steps in this work, I will do what I don't want to do, because the disease I got that I'm powerless over will make me do what I don't want to do. You think I knew that shit when I got here? Never had a clue. Never had a clue. Later on, you know, as I grew in this, I started understanding, you know, because the beautiful book said, this one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Well, if I had to find him, it meant I didn't have him. And if he's the source and he's the power over everything, and I'm powerless over alcohol, like the first step said, you know, what powerless over alcohol really meant was I was godless when I got here. Whatever form of God you got is all right with us, but you ain't got it when you got here as far as alcohol's concerned. And this disease that I had been getting me to abandon God and spirituality so that I ended up in the grips. And when it said, there's one who has all power, that one is God, that's right after we say, remember we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling and powerful. I mean, well, that don't jive. How does that jive? How can the disease be powerful if God's got all the power? Or does it mean that God's got all the power except the power that alcohol's got? Because how could it be both? If alcohol's powerful, how can God have all the power? Well, it was fairly easy to work out, really. God was the positive power. The disease was the negative power. The disease had all the negative power, and it had gotten me over a long period of time to abandon God and spirituality so that I was in the grips of the negative power and had no positive power to combat the power of the negative power. So that when I turned back and asked for help, he came back in my life, sent me to you. Now I've got a 12-step spiritual fellowship. You guys introduced me to a big book, BIGBOOK, Believing in God Beats Our Old Knowledge. Oh, blimey, that's good. In the book was a program, PROGRAM, People Relying on God Relaying a Message. Wow. Message, MESSAGE. Me, Step, Sponsoring God Every Day. Wow. What? How do I do? What do I do about this? Get a sponsor. Sponsor? What do you mean, sponsor? SPONSOR. Sober Person Offering Newcomers Suggestions on Recovery. Oh, shit. What shall I ask him? What's in the book? What's in the book? The steps. Steps? What do you mean steps? STEPS, solution to every problem, sober. Oh, blimey. Have I got to do the steps? Of course you've got to do the steps. Why have you got to do the steps? Well, if you don't do the steps, you go crazy. You go nuts. What do you mean nuts? NUTS, not using the steps. Wow. Well, why will I do that? So you stay sober. Sober? What do you mean sober? S-O-B-E-R, son of a bitch, everything's real. Shit. See, I don't know none of this. I have no idea about none of this. See? But I do today. And I know that there's a total difference between sober and sobriety. I see a lot of people in recovery, they're sober a long time. Don't have any sobriety. If you think that's a judgment, you're right. It is. But I learned that sober and sobriety are two different things. I know we talk about, and our literature says about sobriety. We even give chips for 30 days of sobriety. But we're really talking about being sober. And sober is not enough. Sobriety is enough. You know, we say sobriety. We think a man's unthinking if he thinks sobriety is enough. Well, sobriety has to be enough, but being sober is not enough. I have been physically sober many, many times in my life. Many, many times in my life I have been physically sober as I stand before you now with 34 years. Every time I was released from a joint, no matter what kind of a joint it was, I was as physically sober as I stand before you right now. Never had any sobriety. I was sober, but I never had any sobriety. S-O-B-R-I-E-T-Y, sobriety. Staying off booze, recovery is everything to you. Sober is the base bottom line of the whole thing. Without that, nothing works. But now we got a chance to grow through the program, haven't we? Same as alcohol. Alcohol and alcoholism, totally different thing. See, I didn't know, when I identified as as a fully conceded alcoholic. You know, that's what in the beautiful book says on page 30. It says we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. It's the first step in recovery, but it's not the first of the 12 steps, though it's often confused. Well-meaning people often say that a man does the first of the 12 steps as soon as he walks through the door and raises his hand as an alcoholic. It's not true. Nowhere in the first of the 12 steps does it say anything about admitting you're alcoholic. Check it out. But it's the first step in recovery that we got to learn to. We learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that was alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. You know? Well, I didn't know that I was alcoholic. How could I fully concede to my innermost self that I was alcoholic if I didn't even know what it was about me that made me alcoholic? So I went around asking, what is it about me that makes me alcoholic? What is it about you that makes you alcoholic? People didn't know. They thought, believed, and said they did know. They told me things like, one's too many, a thousand ain't enough. Once you start, you can't stop. You can't stop from starting. You know, you're blacking out. You can't control and enjoy your drink. Well, that's not what makes me alcoholic. That's what I do and what I know about myself because I'm alcoholic, but that's not what makes me alcoholic. What makes me alcoholic isn't what I do because I'm alcoholic. And I wanted to know, how could I fully concede if I didn't know what it was about me that made me alcoholic? Well-meaning people, at least I hope they're well-meaning, said, don't worry about it, utilize, don't analyze. Oh, Mick, you're just going too much, don't, because they didn't know. But there's something specific about us that makes us alcoholic that isn't applicable to the non-alcoholic. I got three sisters and a brother, not alcoholic. I'm alcoholic. Same blood, same family, same environment, same everything. I is, they isn't. They don't know why I drink. I don't know why they don't. I ask them, why don't you drink? They say, I don't like it. I say, what? What don't you like about it? They say, well, if I have one too many, I feel sick. I say, sick? You've got to drink past that. I mean, who stops at sick? They don't laugh. They think I'm weird. Any other weirdos here today? Yeah, no shit. Who's heard those words? Those words you hear growing up. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? For Christ's sake, what's wrong with you? And people ask me what's wrong with me as if I knew. What is wrong with you? Oh, actually, I got a twofold disease. It's an obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. Can't control my drinking. I don't know what's wrong with me. What's wrong with you? Why do you drink like you do? Why don't you drink like I do? Because I don't know. See, I have no idea. I have no idea why I do what I do and what I've been doing. You know, I don't know anything about being alcoholic or nothing like that. You know, but I learned well, and you guys taught me well. When I was just a little kid, it was so devastating and so painful where I came from. People would tell me stuff, and I wouldn't like it, couldn't stand it. So I would mentally change it to something I did like, and then blame you for telling me. People would say, what's wrong with this kid? There's something wrong with this kid. He don't hear shit right. He'll get you in trouble, this kid. Lock him up. Put him away somewhere. Is something wrong with that kid? No, I don't know. I'm just a little kid. Later on, when I discovered alcohol, I discovered what it was. Alcohol was doing for me what I was doing as a little kid. That's what made me alcoholic. That's what differentiated me from the non-alcoholic and my three sisters and brother. And I learned that at the first meeting that I went to. I told a man a story. He said, you're an alcoholic. I said, what? He said, you're an alcoholic. I said, alcoholic? That's a bloody mean thing to say to somebody. You say a mean thing like that to somebody for? He said, you're alcoholic. I said, why did you say that? He said, because if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and sounds like a duck and smells like a duck, it's a bloody duck. Just because he's been taking some shit and thinks he's an eagle, no, you're a duck. You're a duck, I'm a duck. Quack, quack, he went. I went, holy shit. This is the bloody funny farm, man, you know. Guys loving on you and shit, and dicks, ducks and eagles. And, I mean, wow. But I didn't know he was breaking through the big bad barrier of denial so that I could understand what it was about me that made me alcoholic. Because that's what it is. You know, what it is about me that makes me alcoholic is the difference between alcohol and alcoholism. But that's what alcohol did for me. I go out drinking as a delicate little duck. I have a few stiff ones and turn into an eagle. Go swooping around looking for prey. And it's not P-R-A-Y either. Alcohol changes me from a duck to an eagle. Mary in my home group back there in Santa Monica, she puts it as well as I've ever heard anybody put it. She says that when she drinks, she's a bad-ass drunk, is Mary. Delicate little dudette, but a bad-ass drunk. She says, when she drinks, she feels wittier, prettier, and tittier. You know? And I know exactly what she means. You know? And that's what it is. Alcohol changes my perception of reality. It changes me from a duck to an eagle. That's what makes us alcoholic. Not what I do because I'm alcoholic. And I learned that and I saw it and I looked for it in the beautiful book, but I couldn't see it. I heard certain speakers touch on it, but it didn't quite like nail it down. So give me a cigar on that one. But in the doctor's opinion, I found some words that, you know, covered it for me if I got inventive. Because in the beautiful book, in the doctor's opinion, it said, men and women drink primarily because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I went, oh, well, I can dig that. It didn't say alcoholic men and women. It said men and women drink primarily because they like the effect produced by alcohol. So I understood that. Alcohol changes how I feel. Alcohol does that, and I heard that in meetings. People like drinking because it made them feel good. It made them feel better. You know, so I dig that. But that's what alcohol does. That's alcohol. Alcohol changes my feelings. Now, for the alcoholic who continues to drink and drinks over what we call an invisible line and becomes alcoholic, now the rules have changed. Now it's no longer about alcohol changing how I feel. It's about alcoholism changing my perception of reality. And it said, they are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes at once from taking a few drinks. That's a change in perception of reality. I went, wow, this is far out. I'm an alcoholic. He said, I'm an alcoholic. The voices started talking. Don't admit you're alcoholic. Don't tell them you're alcoholic, whatever you do. Don't. He said, I'm alcoholic. You're not alcoholic. You're nuts. You're crazy. No, I don't want to be nuts. They keep locking me up for being crazy. No one's ever locked me up for being alcoholic. I'd rather be alcoholic. Wow, I'm not crazy, I'm not nuts, I'm alcoholic. Far out, far out. I'm alcoholic, I know what's wrong with me, holy shit. Being alcoholic was like a step up for me. I went, wow. I couldn't wait to run home and tell my best friend, the one who kicked me out that morning. I ran home, I told him, I said, hey, guess what, I'm alcoholic, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. He said, no shit. It's all right for you to love. And I've loved being alcoholic ever since. I love being alcoholic. You know, I never knew. Powerless over alcohol. I didn't know that. In my neighborhood, you couldn't walk around my hood without saying you're powerless over nothing. If I'd walked around my neighborhood saying I was powerless, they'd have changed me from Mickey to Michelle, for Christ's sake. You know, so I learned, and I learned that, you know, I've been incarcerated in a lot of joints, and some of those joints let me read a Bible when I was in bread and water or in the hole or anywhere like that. Not always, but sometimes. And I remember distinctly reading the Bible. I quite like the Bible, but B-I-B-L-E, being informed before leaving Earth, or, you know, basic instructions before leaving Earth. I quite like that. And I remember reading in there saying that when any two are gathered in my name, there I will be in your midst. And I went, wow, that's what we do in AA. Two alcoholics come together for the purpose of recovery, the third factor. God comes in our midst and produces a power greater than either of us. So it's produced by us, but it's greater than us, and we can absolutely depend upon it to not have to drink today. And that was a place that I could start, because here it was, right here, right now. Here, in this very meeting right now, is so much power over alcohol, probably don't know what to do with it. We've got to have a power, haven't we? We've got to have a power in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says so in the beautiful book. I'll read it in a minute, you know. But we've got to have a power, because if I suffer from a disease that makes me do what I already don't want to do, when I leave here, I'll have to go and get drunk, because it'll make me get drunk. Where are we? Where is this? Where is this place? Where am I? What? Cook Forest? All right, well, there, wherever that is. Well, I don't know this area very well, but if we ain't got a power right here, right now, that we can take out there to enable us to not have to drink when we get out there, we'll all have to get drunk. Well, I got a feeling that Cook Forest ain't ready for 700 alkies to go out and get shit-faced right now. So why would I walk around going, powerless, powerless? No, I got so much bloody power over alcohol, as long as I stay here with you doing the simple basic things that we do and learning and being a small part of this great whole. Powerless. I came in here hopeless, helpless and powerless, but not today, not while I'm here with you, not being a small part of this great whole. Got so much power. There's nobody right here, right now, powerless over alcohol. That sounds a little bit sacrilegious. No one else says that, do they? But I'm saying it. Me plus you is a power greater than me on my own. You plus us is a power greater than you on your own. Together we can do what I couldn't do alone. I couldn't stay sober, you couldn't stay sober, but together we can stay sober. And when we come together for the purpose of recovery, God comes in our midst. I don't care whether you're atheist, whether you're agnostic, I don't care what you are. But we got the power right here, right now. And when we reach out, we touch it, and when we touch it, we become a part of it. We got so much power right here, as long as I stay here with you. I saw it in the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I saw so much in here. I looked up an AA meeting and went there alone. Here I found an ingredient that had been lacking in any other effort I'd made to save myself. Here was power. Here was power to live to the end of any given day. Power to have the courage to face the next day. Power to have friends. Power to help people. Power to be sane. Power to stay sober. That was 7 years ago and many AA meetings ago. And I haven't had a drink during those 7 years. Moreover, I'm deeply convinced that so long as I continue to strive in my bumbling way towards the principles I first encountered in the earlier chapters of this book, this remarkable power will continue to flow through me. What is this power? With my AA friends, all I can say is that it's a power greater than myself. If pressed further, all I can do is follow the psalmist who said it long before me. Be still and know that I am God. That's good shit, isn't it? Power. Power. So in that second step, came to believe that a power greater than myself, and here it was, a power greater than me, a place to start so that I didn't have to deny and rebuke that, all those concepts of God, would restore me to sanity. Now I'm certified insane in 4 different countries. I know all about sanity. But they never described sanity like you did. Whatever the legal definitions or the dictionary definitions or any of those definitions, what you guys said to me was, we classified insanity as repeating the same behavior and expecting a different result. Drinking. Well, if drinking was the insanity, to be restored to sanity meant not drinking. And here was a power that if I come and joined you and asked you, will you help me? Can you teach me? I want to do what you guys teach me, become a small part of this great whole. I won't have to drink today. That was restoring me to sanity. They didn't say that to me when they came and grabbed my ass. No one ever came and grabbed my ass in their white coats and said, we're locking you up for repeating the same behavior and expecting a different result. And they didn't know what was wrong with me. They'd keep locking me up and I'd get incarcerated. They knew how to bash me up. They knew how to hurt me. They knew how to chain me to padded cells and to zap me on electric machines and stuffed me with tranks and Christ knows what else, but they didn't know what was wrong with me. They didn't know how to treat alcoholism, but you guys did. Alcoholic. January 15th, 1983. Alcohol stopped working, and in my case, drugs as well. D-R-U-G-S, devil's revenge upon God's subjects. Because I'm a real alcoholic. I am a real alcoholic. Don't confuse me with anybody who ain't an alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic. Being a real alcoholic, I have the right to be dysfunctional in as many ways as I like. Don't tell me I'm restricted or limited. If there's good dysfunction out there, I want my share of it. And being a real alcoholic, I don't just want my share. What do I want? More. It don't even matter what it is. I just want more of it. I'd even want more bloody herpes than you. You know, I just would. And yes, this is alcohol. We're talking about alcohol and alcoholism. But it has to include all my mood-altering substances that affect you from the neck up. And I didn't know that when I got here. Because I do. I always drank the drug alcohol, but I didn't only do it. I also did lots of other shit. You know? If this 12 steps attached to anything, in fact, I'm a contender for it. You know? AA, NACA, ACA, Overeaters, Little Peters. It doesn't matter what it is. If there's 12 steps attached to it, I'm a contender for it. Some of you have known me a long time, so I better back up and be rigorously honest, because I did actually go to a Little Peter meeting, but they wouldn't let me in, said I didn't qualify. They let Dan in. Dan was all right. We have to include all my, and I say that because I didn't hear it when I got here, and in today's world there's a worldwide epidemic of especially prescription medication. I'm not against medication, so if the first word in your mouth, first thought that you had was what about my meds, you may want to evaluate that yourself, because I'm not talking about that. But there's a worldwide epidemic of prescription medication. We've got to be very, very careful about that stuff. You know, my sponsor helped me with that. About 5 years ago, when I had that stomach surgery, I had an intensive stomach surgery, and you know, I had to go on Vicodin and painkillers and what have you. And my sponsor, Bob Barrett, at the time, the longest reigning member of Narcotics Anonymous, was my sponsor, a lovely, lovely man, lovely big old black man. I loved him, and he was monitoring my meds like I monitor the guys I work with meds. And I guess at one time, I guess I was about 28 years or something, and I must have got cocky, I guess, because I said to him one day, Bob, I ain't got a problem with bloody meds and pills and stuff like that. I ain't got a problem with that. And wise old bugger that he is, like most sponsors can be, he said, it ain't that you got a problem, it's so you don't get one. We know lots of folks, don't we, that suffered the consequences of not being guarded against these things. And on January the 15th, 1983, I never drank from that day to this. I never came here to quit drinking. I never had the only requirement to quit drinking. I knew nothing about being alcoholic. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing about nothing. But I had the gift of desperation. Alcohol had stopped working. It had stopped changing my perception of reality. It hadn't stopped getting me drunk. It hadn't stopped rotting my liver. It hadn't stopped getting me locked up. It had stopped doing what I told you, changing my perception of reality. And I couldn't stop from doing it because I was addicted to it, and it made me do it anyway. So, you know, I was screwed. I was absolutely screwed. And I didn't know what to do, but I never drank from the very first meeting. But I carried on doing the other things because I never heard that you shouldn't. You know, and I saw on page one, whether he dieth of musket or by pot. I went, oh, I like pot. Anybody here like a little pot? Anybody like a lot? Yeah, no shit. I didn't have a problem with pot. Pot only did two things to me, made me horny, made me hungry. Nothing wrong with that. except some mornings you wake up with a sore arm and a bed full of pizza crust. But apart from that, so I'm dabbling in all these other areas, just lightly, because I'm with you now and I'm going to meet, so I'm not running rampant like I was, so I'm not drinking, but I'm still dabbling. And 4 months later, I'm living proof what the beautiful book says, without a sufficient substitute. I'm totally insane in Alcoholics Anonymous, not drinking, still dabbling without the sufficient substitute. And the guy who started Cocaine Anonymous, you know, was a friend of mine, and he actually changed the wording of the first step in Cocaine Anonymous from we admitted we were powerless over cocaine and all other mind-altering chemicals to substances. And I said, Johnny, you can't do that. We took a worldwide group conscience. You're going to take the program out of the beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous and apply it to Cocaine Anonymous because it's already proven to work. He said, I don't care. I'm leaving it like that. He said, chemicals leaves a back door open for slippery buggers like you to slide through, because pot ain't a chemical. Mushrooms ain't a chemical, you know. So he changed it, and I went, why, you got to quit everything? Yes, he said, everything. What on a mucker, you know. So my clean date is May 8th, the day after May 7th, which was the last mind mood altering substances, and I was completely crazy and insane. And so if you're wondering about any of that stuff, or if you never heard it like I never heard it, which is why I'm talking about it now in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it has to include all mind, mood, and substances, and I'm really glad it did. Oops. Yeah. Where's that gone? Oh, here it is. The bones. You know, I'm going to wrap this up. But I'll tell you, I can't remember the last time I told this story, but it's so true. You guys know me better than my own mum knows me. I used to drive my mum crazy, you know, especially not hearing shit. Because I would come home drunk. Alcoholics, you know, have this insane belief that they know how to be quiet. And you come home and you're all shit-faced, like... Mum's in her bed, upstairs, a good woman like she is. She'd hear everything going on downstairs. I could never get away with anything in my mum's house. That was her domain. She'd hear me stumble bumming around. She'd yell out down the stairs, drunk again, son! And I'd go, so am I, Mum. She'd say, I'm not bloody drunk, weirdo. The hell's wrong with it? And I wouldn't get it, and I'd think, well, why did she say she was drunk then? You know, she's messing with me. She didn't understand me, my mum. She loved me dearly in the end, but she didn't understand me as well as you folks who've never seen me before and might not see me again. You know me better than my own mum knows me. Every year I go home to London, England, where I'm from. First thing I do, go around my mum's house, knock her up, I tell her, Mum! 34 years sober. She says, so is the cat. You know? Bloody cat's a legend, you know? I mean, you know? She don't give me no pat on the back for not doing something I shouldn't have done anyway. But I'll tell you why this is worth it to a guy like me. I described somewhat about where I was. I've been incarcerated in nut wards for the criminally insane. I've been locked away in places cuckoos wouldn't fly over. They didn't know what was wrong with me. Growing up, it was a horrendous. When I was a kid, my mum used to bash me. When I got bigger, I used to bash her. I came and joined you. You guys said, keep coming back. I did. Kept coming back. My mum, she never went to a single 12-step meeting in her entire life. She passed a while ago. She never went to a single 12-step meeting in her entire life. I came to you every day. I learned from you guys. You guys taught me well how to apply these principles in all my affairs, especially personal relationships. I don't know about you guys here in Cook Forest, but us down there in Santa Monica, we're not very good at personal relationships. We don't give them up, but we're not very good at them. I wrote a word for relationships. R-E-L-A-T-I-O-N-S-H-I-P. Relationship. Really exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril. All the sickos like that one. My mum never went to a single meeting her entire life. That relationship turned. That relationship turned and worked its way like we know it does. We recovered. Became a beautiful, loving relationship. When my mum passed, my three sisters and brother were sitting around her bed. She was ready to go. Mum wanted to go. She was 88 years old. She was burnt out. She was tired. They told me that Mum was going in and out of comas, and at one stage she came up on her elbows and she had a big, broad grin on her face. They said, Mum, they thought the time had come. Said, are you all right, Mum? And she turned around and with a big, broad grin on her face, she said, Mickey's doing good in AA in America. And she laid back and passed. How does that happen, folks? How does a guy like me come out of a nut ward for the criminally insane, put a smile on an old lady's face? She goes to meet her maker. How does that happen? It happens right here. Right here in Alcoholics Anonymous is where that happens. You know, I get a lot of juice, I get a lot of rah-rah, I get a lot of this and that and that and this, and people say things. I was just told that I was a celebrity in Alcoholics Anonymous by two celebrities. I was over in San Fernando Valley. I don't live there anymore, but I lived there for a long time and went and visited the old home group. Went to the meeting, still a great meeting, even though I don't go there anymore. And I came out of the meeting, two worldwide celebrities, Academy Award winning celebrities that you all know by name, actresses that I've known a long time. They said, hi Mick, I haven't seen you in a while. I said, yeah, don't live in the neighborhood anymore, but come to see the old home group, see how you're all doing. One of them said, I didn't realize, Mick, what a celebrity you become in 12-step fellowship. I said, what are you talking about? She said, you're like this guru-type guy. Everybody knows you. You go around speaking in seven continents. You've been on seven continents carrying the message. Everybody knows you. I said, what are you saying? She said, I'm making a movie in New York, she said, and I went to two meetings in New York, and in both the meetings they quoted you. They mentioned you by name. You're like this 12-step celebrity. I said, yeah, fucking big deal, a celebrity in an anonymous program. Said, no, you're a celebrity. I'm just a small part of a great whole. And I love that. I love being a small part of a great whole. My telephone number, incidentally, is 818 area code, are you sober? 818, are you, like Toys R Us, S-O-B-E-R. And I give you that number because that's what I got at the very first meeting. I got home and there was two numbers I had. And guess what? I know you don't, but I did. I called one of them numbers. I've been an active member from day one. The guy answered the phone. I said, I don't know who you are, pal. But I got your number in my hand. Oh, he said, I can tell from your accent. He said, from the meeting at lunchtime. Oh, I said, was you at the meeting? He said, I gave you the number. I went, oh. I said, what about them meetings? He said, what about them? I said, you go to them meetings? He said, yeah, I go to meetings. I said, can I go to one of them meetings with you tonight? He said, well, normally I would say yes, he said, but tonight I've made arrangements to go to a movie. I said, oh, all right, don't matter. I went all little inside, you know. And he picked up on it like we do. He went, holy shit, you may have just saved my life. I said, no, I never done nothing. He said, a newcomer wants to go to a meeting. I tell him, no, I'm going to a movie. Holy shit, where do you live? I'm coming round to pick you up. I said, what about your movie? He went, you're much more important than a movie. Oh, I went all special again, didn't I? He came and picked me up. Took me to a meeting. Got me a beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, just like this one. Third edition, just like this one. Still got it. Got lots of miles on it. Just like you guys told me. Somebody who's got a book that's falling apart usually isn't falling apart themselves. Still got it. Fast forward a little bit. A little while ago, I was out in Balboa Park. Big picnic, like an event like this. I had all my troops with me. They ain't got much money, but I taught them how to do what you guys taught me, how to be of service, to do clean up and security and stuff like that. And I had my troops with me, and I bumped into old Zachary, the guy all those years ago. I said, hi, Zach, how you doing, man? Good to see you. He said, good to see you, Mick. I said, how you doing? He said, I'm doing all right. He said, I know you're doing good. He said, I hear good things about you. I said, I'm doing great. I said, what are you doing here? He said, I'm speaking at the meeting. I went, really? Guess what? All these years after, he's still 4 months ahead of me. Actions, you see. He's still active. I'm active. He's active. I learned that from you. I never knew I was learning it. I never knew I was learning simple, basic things like you guys were teaching me. I hadn't been around here many minutes, and a rough, gruff old guy got hold of me, and he said, come, mate, we go and wash the cups at the Tuesday night meeting. I said, I don't want to wash the cups at the Tuesday night meeting. He said, we're going to get drunk. I said, I don't want to get drunk. Should we come and wash the cups? I mean, shit. They weren't delicate little cups like we got here. They were these chunky-ass mugs, hairy-ass mugs with butts in them and ash and shit. 200 of the buggers. Washing these cups up to me elbows in water, hour after everybody's gone home. You know, resentful. Pissing and moaning. Washing cups. Felt like a right nerd. Because that's what alcohol did. Alcohol removed the nerdness. You know? Alcohol removed the nerdness. I felt like a nerd. I drank. I didn't feel like a nerd. I felt like a nerd. I drink and I didn't care if I was a nerd. I felt like a nerd and I drank and you were a goddamn nerd. Screw you. You know? Feeling like a nerd in washing the cups. The following day, he said, come on, Mick, he said, if they let us, we'll come and wash the cups next week. I said, we just washed the cups last week. He said, they'll need washing again. I said, I don't want to wash. I don't even wash my own cups. He said, we're going to get drunk. I don't want to get drunk. Come on, going to wash the cups. I went, oh, shit, wash the cups. Washing the bloody cups again felt like a right dickhead, you know, washing cups. This went on for 4 months. 4 months, I'm pissing and moaning, washing bloody cups after it. One day, guy come and stood at the end of the sink. I said, what do you want? He said, sponsor said I've got to wash the cups. I said, what cups? He said, I guess them cups. I said, piss off and get your own cups. You ain't having my cups. I didn't know. Look, I've gone over a few minutes, I guess. I'm only just getting started, but... You know, I'll give you a little clue. If you're wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alcoholic, I'll give you a little clue. You better not have laughed in here today. They say, if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sick bastard like me, there ain't no doubt about you, pal. I don't get through to well people. Well people don't laugh at my shit. But that's the language of the heart, isn't it? H-E-A-R-T. Healing, enjoying and recovering together. Page 132. Number 132. Thanks very much for allowing me to come here and be the small part of this great whole. Namaste.